Good afternoon. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone. Welcome to the committee. I call this meeting of Committee on Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members and guests and testifiers, please mute your mics. This remote hearing is conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed at the House television webcast. With that, members, the committee legislative assistant, Mr. Bedru, will now take the role.
Chair Noir.
Present.
Chair Noir present. Vice Chair Zhang. Vice Chair Zhang. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton present. Baker.
Baker present.
Baker present. Dabney.
Dabney present.
Dabney present. Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Greenman.
Present.
Greenman present. Haley.
Haley present.
Haley present. Juergens.
Juergens present.
Juergens present. Cagle.
Cagle present.
Cagle present. Katiza Watun.
Katiza Watun present.
Katiza Watun present. Olsen. Olsen. Jean. Jean.
I can see two Jean. He said present.
Thank you, Chair. Vice Chair Zhang. Vice Chair Zhang. Olsen. Olsen. Chair, we have a quorum.
Members, there is a quorum present. I will now entertain a motion to approve the minutes for the past meeting on February 9th, 2022.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamilton moves the approval for the minutes for February 9, 2022. Any discussions? Seeing none. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the minutes for February 9, 2022 is now adopted. Members, I know I did say that we're going to recognize our newest member, and we didn't do it in previous meetings. And I just wanted to thank the nonpartisan staff for their work they do day in, day out, weekend, and every day. I just wanted to say thank you. I know we have Ms. Ashley. And if you can just quickly say hello to the members here, as I promised to say. And also we have Representative Liz Olson present. So Ashley, welcome to the committee and just introduce yourself in a minute or so. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. My name is Ashley Eng. I'm the new fiscal analyst for this committee. I also staff the Climate and Energy and Commerce Committees. I'm happy to be here. I came from the Department of Revenue's Tax Research Division. So I'm happy to make this transition. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, members, we do have a hearing today on paid family medical leave. We have House File 1200. I would like to invite the chief author of the bill, Representative Chair Richardson, to the committee. I will move this bill to be laid over for possible inclusion, and then later on we'll discuss the amendment to your bill, Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Chair Noor. House File 1200 is about ensuring that we have support for families in their time of need. We all know that illness can strike at any time, and for too many Minnesota families, they're being put in a no-win situation where they must choose between either recovering their health or keeping their job, while some are being forced to choose whether they'll care for a loved one or secure their next paycheck. These are impossible choices, but it's the reality for many Minnesotan families. The COVID pandemic has exposed the inadequate and the inconsistent safety net available for families. When we look at the data, we find stark disparities in terms of who has access to paid family and medical leave and who does not. It is likely no surprise that workers earning the lowest wages in our state and Black and Latinx workers and women are the least likely to have access to paid leave programs. The uneven safety nets that have been built for Minnesota families come at a cost. The research is clear. Access to paid leave improves the mental and physical health for new parents. It reduces the rate of infant mortality of infants, and it reduces preterm births, which can be incredibly costly. On average, the cost of one premature birth is over $144,000. And that doesn't even get into the long-term costs and consequences for that child. Paid leave also reduces the cost associated with low birth weight births and improves overall infant health and cognitive development. It reduces reliance on social service programs like NFIP. Also, access to paid leave decreases nursing home placements and greater workforce attachments, reducing turnover. Nationally, more than three quarters of voters support paid family leave programs. In the midst of the COVID pandemic, we as a state and as a nation have been pushing forward legislation and unprecedented support for large and small businesses. And we've been doing that because it's the right thing to do. And for every business out there, there are workers that power that business, and they are worthy of recognition and support too. This bill is about core values. It's about what is important to families. All of us and our families at some point are going to need some time off to confront an illness or welcome a new one to our family. Right now, our paid leave systems are separate, uneven, and not equal. Some families are getting the safety net, and the message to them is that their family's health and well-being are important. They are valuable, that they deserve dignity, and they deserve to have the opportunity to take leave to care for themselves or a loved one, while other families have been left with no safety net, not to care for themselves or to care for a family member. And what message are we leaving them with? Can't we all agree their family is worthy of dignity? Aren't their families worthy of a safety net? Aren't they valuable? And shouldn't they have the ability to care for themselves while they're sick? Shouldn't they be able to care for their loved ones as well? No one's humanity is less valuable because they make less money than someone else. No one is less valuable because they happen to be an employee rather than an employer. If we can all agree that every family should have the opportunity to thrive and achieve optimal health, and that every family should have the opportunity to care for themselves or a loved one when in need, then that is a starting point to developing a paid system that honors humanity of all Minnesotan working families. And with that, Mr. Chair, I've got a number of testifiers here on my behalf.
Thank you, Chair. Richardson, I see on the list, the first testifier is Deborah Fitzpatrick. Please welcome to the committee, introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor, members of the committee. My name is Deborah Fitzpatrick, and I'm the Director of Policy and Research at Children's Defense Fund, Minnesota. I have a couple of quick slides I'd like to share, if that would be okay.
Yes, please.
Kind of level set and remind people about this particular policy that we're considering today. In my prior role at the University of Minnesota, I did lead the research team that conducted Minnesota's design and implementation study. And since, again, this committee has seen the bill before, I'll spend just a few minutes regrounding at a high level and then sharing a few updates. House File 1200 sets up a statewide social insurance program that is self-funded over the long term through contributions from workers and employers. It allows self-employed people and business owners to join the program and employers to provide a comparable program. Eligibility is based on workforce participation. It's an earned benefit, and healthcare providers must certify the need for leave. Among the design options, this one was chosen for a variety of reasons. I'll lift up just three. First, it is a portable benefit, which is especially important for workers with multiple employers, low-wage workers, those changing jobs. Second, it creates the broadest possible risk pool, a feature necessary for keeping costs low and leveling the playing field among employers. And finally, it is the proven effective, sustainable model that gives all workers an equal opportunity to earn a benefit. While the bill provides up to 12 weeks for medical and 12 weeks for family leave, experience shows that workers take what they need, and that is on average far less than the maximum allowed. Massachusetts, for example, provides up to 26 weeks, and workers are taking 10 on average. There is no evidence that Minnesota workers are less committed to their employers or coworkers or more inclined to abuse benefits than those in other states. In fact, one could argue the opposite. Building on this committee's joint hearing with the Early Childhood Committee last week on the importance of the first 1,000 days, the Prenatal to Three Policy Impact Center identified paid family leave among the top five policies states should adopt. Based on comprehensive reviews of rigorous research, they found paid leave advancing the broadest set of goals critical to those first 1,000 days. Notably for this committee, these include addressing a parent's ability to work and optimal child development, both important aspects of addressing Minnesota's opportunity and outcome gaps. And while there has been significant discussion about workforce shortages and improved benefits, a November 2021 survey by the Kaiser Family Foundation found only marginal progress in the percentage of workers with access to paid family and medical leave benefits through their employer, leaving the vast majority of employers and workers without this important form of support. Meanwhile, in the five states with an operating program, both workers and employers found the programs to be a critically important tool for managing the pandemic. The programs have held up with 2022 premiums in the closest comparator states in the closest comparator states comparable to those in House File 1200. Analysis is ongoing, but the experiences of these states continues to provide valuable insights for delivering an effective Minnesota program. With that, I'll stop and be available later for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzpatrick, for that slide and sharing the expertise that you have. And I just wanted to invite the next person, Ms. Rabin. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Hi, my name is Molly Rabin. I am the president of AFSCME Local 2440. I am a 35-year-old mother of two sons, and I have been employed with Scott County Health and Human Services for the past 7.5 years. Shortly after I began working at Scott County, my husband and I began to discuss starting family. After meeting with my benefits coordinator at work, I immediately started worrying about how I would be able to afford having a baby. I was told that our agency believed that mothers needed to quote unquote plan for a baby and that we did not have a paid maternity leave. She advised me to save up as much PTO as possible and finally explained FMLA since I was my health insurance carrier for my family. I did not take vacation for 2 years. I put money into a savings account every month. It was my hope to save enough money to pay for my insurance deductibles after birth, as well as have enough money to pay for my leave once my PTO ran out. However, in addition to my unpaid time, I would also accrue bills for my insurance premiums, so I needed to make sure I paid for that as well. I gave birth on July 17th, 2017. My son was born 5 weeks early. After his delivery, he was immediately rushed to Children's Hospital Minneapolis, and he was placed in the neonatal intensive care unit. He received care at Children's for 2 weeks before he was discharged and able to come home. While I planned to save money to pay for my insurance deductibles, it didn't mean much as we had reached our out-of-pocket maximum. This dramatically impacted my remaining savings. Mm-hmm. Scott County told me that I needed to plan for a baby. How do you plan for an emergency, though? How do you plan for premature birth? The precious time I had hoped to be with my baby was cut short because of his premature birth. We ended up spending that time in the NICU. During the most critical time, I needed to be bonding with my baby, but I was forced to return to work. We had exhausted our savings to cover the cost of his medical bills and my unpaid leave. I remember sleepless nights in the hospital wondering if I should even return to work. I did return to work, but I vowed that this would never happen again to me. It took me 4 more years to save enough money and PTO so that we could even consider having another baby. My second boy was just born on April 25th, 2021. We didn't want 4 years between our children, but it was my only hope if I actually wanted to take 3 months of a maternity leave. I am now 35, and I don't have 4 more years to save for another child. So this is where my maternity nightmare ends. I am blessed with 2 beautiful, healthy sons, but I wish that we as a society planned more value on the time mothers and fathers spend with their newborn children. I implore you to work towards a paid family leave in Minnesota that will allow both parents the freedom to bond and care for their new babies, whether through birth or adoption, without fear of lost wages, lost PTO, or lost job security. When we begin to prioritize and value the family bonding at birth, we will produce better workers, more secure children, and a society that recognizes the value of the American family. Thank you for your time and your consideration and attention.
Thank you, Ms. Rabine, and I appreciate your testimony. The next person is Swenson Platt. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to bring my testimony today. My name is Dan Swenson Platt. I've owned and operated Butter Bakery Cafe as a sustainably run business in Minneapolis since 2006. I'm also a member of Main Street Alliance, a national network of small business owners committed to creating strong communities, which are the true engine of small business growth. As a small business owner, I do my best to take care of my employees. I adopted earned sick and safe time before the ordinance came to Minneapolis. I created an equitable model to pay my employees a living wage, but I've struggled to provide paid leave or health benefits. I've had to pick and choose, and sadly, turn down requests for paid leave time over the years, losing staff. I'm currently providing 4 weeks of leave for one of my cooks to take time to care for and eventually bury his dying father. I can only do this because I have an SBA economic injury and disaster loan I sought out to survive the pandemic. I used both my PPP draws, and I made use of the paid leave provisions and Families First Coronavirus Response Act. I was able to keep employees on staff. These were important resources to help my employees balance their health and keep their families safe while still earning income. 3 employees used the paid days for childcare, and another 8 used health-related leave, but it wasn't enough. I still paid unearned time off. All of us will need time off at some point in our lives, whether to start a family or recover from illness or provide care to loved ones. And as much as I would love to provide paid leave to my employees, I cannot do it alone. In 2021, our unearned paid time off policy only covered 40% of the leave I paid out to manage COVID health precautions. House File 1200 would help keep my staff and myself safe during this ongoing pandemic. It would serve as a vital safety net for the future. If there was a full paid family medical leave program available, I may have been able to retain the 8 employees who left during the pandemic. I urge members of the committee to pass House File 1200 this session. Paid family medical leave will level the playing field for small businesses across Minnesota, allowing us to compete with major corporations, boost retention, enable me to support all of my employees. It's good for business. It's good for Minnesotans. It is the right thing to do. It's time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swenson Platt, and thank you for supporting your employees and providing them the much needed support. Members, the next person to testify is Seyon. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me, everyone. My name is Tabota Seyon, and I'm the owner of Infused Life Plant-Based Emporium in Minneapolis. We are a service that provides holistic plant-based foods and products. We are a small business incubator that provides opportunities for BIPOC women who have plant-based businesses, and we operate out of a storefront in South Minneapolis. I'm also a member of Main Street Alliance. a network of small business owners working towards an equitable and resilient small business community and economy while creating stronger communities. So my story is that recently my family and I had contracted COVID-19. This is the second time in a year. December and January was very difficult for us. We had to completely close down our shop for 4 weeks. And in order to protect myself and my family and the broader community, during this time, we basically had a loss of income due to not being open during this timeline. Aside from that, I also do suffer from chronic back pain. I recently had a car accident 1 year ago. This has been very difficult for me to operate my business during this timeline. I have had multiple days of physical therapy, which has taken a lot of time off from work. I have been told that I need to get surgery. The problem is that with surgery, I will need to take time off. And the first time I heard this, I thought, how am I going to cover, you know, my resources? How am I going to cover up my expenses within my shop? Not to mention, I am the face of the business and I manage a lot of the small businesses within the space. And so they also need the same type of coverage when they need to take time off as well. So I'm here to represent us all in this process. Aside from that, my doctor had also recommended that I will need to have at least a 3 month recovery. During this time, like the Butter Bakery, I have used a lot of my personal finance and safety net as a means to stay afloat within my business. Right now, I'm facing an eviction. So I had to do a fundraiser to raise money to not only help me take the time off to recover, but to also to recover from the time off that I've had to take from being ill. This is not a sustainable option for an entrepreneur like myself. Although I know that I can often lean on the community, I prefer not to do that. I shouldn't have to do that. I should be able to lean on our local government. Minnesotans need paid family leave, medical leave to support ourselves and our communities when we need to provide care to our loved ones, to recover from illness, or even just to start a family. As a small business owner, planning is a very important part of the process of activating a business in our community. But this is not something that you could ever think about putting in a business plan. You can't plan for that. So supporting my family and community through business is really a passion for me, but it shouldn't have to come at a cost of my safety net. Creating true equity for all Minnesotans means leveling up the playing field for small businesses and owners and entrepreneurs like myself. We are stronger together when we come together, and it's more important than ever to support small businesses and working families by passing the House File 1200. Thank you for your time and your commitment.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Ms. Sayan, and also sharing your story with us. Thank you so much. The next testifier is Mr. Reynolds. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Just to be sure, Chair Nora, you said Mr. Reynolds?
Yes.
Oh, I apologize. I'm sorry. My computer said a little blip. Well, thank you, Chair Nora and members. I'm John Reynolds, State Director for the National Federation of Independent Businesses in Minnesota. We're the state's largest small business organization with over 10,000 members in every corner of our state. 75% of our members have fewer than 10 employees. As you've heard before, small businesses are still struggling. Inflation is at 40-year highs, supply chain shortages persist, worker shortages persist, and sales remain well below pre-pandemic levels for many. The payroll tax and mandate on small employers and HF 1200 will only exacerbate these problems and make it harder for Main Street businesses to compete. First, one-size-fits-all mandates don't work on Main Street. Small business arrangements are unique. Our members make every effort to accommodate employees as they need to in a competitive job market. Under HF 1200, small businesses will have to replace workers for up to 24 weeks per year. This is an expensive proposition on its own. Backfilling work through additional overtime or temp workers generally means a significant cost premium. An inability to backfill the work, as may easily be the case, will lead to more lost sales. Workforce challenges are not going away when the pandemic is gone. They were here before and will be here after. Second, We hope the committee will explore in detail assumptions used in the most recent fiscal note, which was completed in 2020 and partly based on models from advocates for the bill. The nearly $1 billion price tag for the program assumes an average weekly benefit of $598 and 6.6 weeks of leave taken. The accuracy of these assumptions matters. Recent examples like HealthMatch, MinSure, and MinLAR show why we should carefully scrutinize assumptions used to estimate new public program costs. The average weekly benefit assumed by advocates suggests an average income for program users that is below both Minnesota's median per capita income and median household income. Yet, actual utilization data in Washington State shows half of users had annualized income over $60,000. If the average user made Minnesota's per capita income and all other assumptions held, the program would increase by $40 million. If the average user made Minnesota's median household income, the program cost would increase by over $400 million. Further, the average week's used estimate is low compared to estimates in utilization from some other states. In Connecticut, the same advocates estimated the average user would take 7.2 weeks out of 12 available. In Washington, where the payroll tax that pays for their program just increased 50%, the average user took 9.3 weeks out of the 12 to 16 weeks available to most. If the average user here took a proportional amount of leave, say 12 weeks, and made per capita income, the program costs would nearly double, and so would the payroll tax. In sum, it's likely this mandate will cost a lot more than we think in terms of program expenses, worker replacement, and small business competitiveness. Using state funds to cover what is likely only a portion of the mandate's cost in the first few years, as is proposed in the amendment, doesn't change the long-term math that this makes it harder for Main Street to compete. We urge the committee to reject this approach and let small businesses find solutions that work for them and their employees. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Reynolds, for your testimony. And I just wanted to note that this will only cost less than a cup of coffee a week based on my assumptions, but we'll have more discussions as we go forward with conversation. The next testifier on the list is Ms. Lewis, Kim Lewis. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kimberly Lewis, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent all 333 school boards across Minnesota. And this afternoon, I'm also speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. We really appreciate the opportunity today to share our thoughts on House File 1200. We have shared our concerns throughout the path of this bill and all the variations that have come along through the last few years. Our school district business officials and HR representatives have alerted us to really three key concerns or questions. Our primary concern is the cost to schools. School boards do not have the authority to levy for funds that would be needed to cover the employer portion of this proposal. Since we don't produce a project such as widgets, we can increase our prices per se, and the funds would need to come out of the general funds, or in other words, the classrooms. In addition, when employees are out, districts have to hire substitutes. We have to be there for our kids when they come to our doors. We've raised this concern in the past, and today it's even more critical as we find ourselves in a staffing crisis. There simply aren't enough substitute teachers, paraprofessionals, bus drivers, nutrition workers, et cetera, to meet the needs of our districts. Even if we could find them, there would be that additional cost to the districts of bringing them on. Another question is how collective bargaining would be impacted. If the bill were to pass, would this statewide benefit be a part of local bargaining negotiations? Would it supersede them? How does that align? And how does it align with the current negotiated pay time off in CBAs for similar reasons for leave? And finally, in addition to the financial concerns, I mentioned before that we have a concern for the classroom routines. Due to the nature of the workforce within our schools, there may be a potential for a greater need of the number of substitutes, as I briefly mentioned just a moment ago. Employees could potentially be out of the classroom for 24 weeks during the school year, or longer if they use their accrued sick and vacation time. If this were the case, our HR representatives who now struggle to hire subs really wonder how they would find an adequate number of highly qualified substitute teachers and other support personnel to be secured. It's our responsibility to keep continuity in our classrooms and with highly qualified individuals in front of our students. We'd like to see the bill referred to education finance so we can continue the discussion there. We believe there are uniquenesses to school districts and would very much like to see the discussion among our committee members. We do plan to continue the discussions with Chair Richardson and others, and we just appreciate the committee's time today and listening to our concerns, and I'll stand for any questions if you have them.
Thank you for your testimony. If you can wait after the testimonies are complete, maybe there'll be a question or two. The next person on the list is Mr. Hamilton. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ryan Hamilton. I'm the Government Relations Associate for the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. The Catholic Conference supports the creation of paid caregiver leave programs and, due to the acute needs of Minnesota families, urged legislators to work collaboratively with employers and worker advocacy groups to find common ground for the common good. During his visit to the United States, Pope Francis said, quote, "We cannot call any society healthy when it does not leave room for family life. We cannot think that a society has a future when it fails to pass laws capable of protecting families and ensuring their basic needs, especially those families just starting out," end quote. As we've heard, today, too many working people are forced to make the difficult financial choices between caring for a loved one and missing a paycheck or even losing their job. When employers fail to protect the dignity and legitimate rights of workers, the state can step in to ensure that there is justice in employee relationships. We commend the diligence and the sense of urgency that this body has shown to address this, this urgent need for workers and families. House File 1200 offers a reasonable solution, but it continues to face a level of opposition that will likely prevent it from becoming law. Perhaps it is time to add a measure of pragmatism to our sense of urgency. The life events that create the need for paid leave also create a burden that employers and employees must find a way to carry together. And the truth is, there are several ways that paid leave programs can be constructed. For example, the paid family leave program in New York is an insurance program that employees pay into through deductions from their paycheck. New York employers are responsible for the administrative aspects of the program and for providing the flexibility in the workplace for employees to utilize the benefit. In closing, if this bill continues to face such staunch opposition, we hope there will be a willingness amongst all stakeholders to pivot towards a middle ground proposal that will honor the reciprocal relationship between employers and employees. Thank you. I look forward to listening to the debate.
Thank you so much for your testimony. If you will stay, we may have one or two questions. The next person on the list, welcome Ms. Shorthost, and please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Lauren Shorthost, and I'm the Director of Workplace Management and Workforce Development Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm speaking today representing the Chamber's 6,300 businesses and 500,000 employees. The majority of our members are small and mid-sized businesses. Like last hearing, I'm also speaking on behalf of the Chamber Federation, which represents more than 43 local chambers and 21,000 businesses, the Minnesota Manufacturers Coalition, which represents a wide range of individual manufacturing associations across the street, and the United for Jobs Coalition, which represents nearly 80 state organizations and their hundreds of thousands of employees. And we are unified in our opposition to House File 1200. In light of time constraints, I'll refer the committee to the testimony I previously gave when this bill was last before the committee and the submitted document co-signed by the coalition members I just mentioned. I would like to reiterate that the message is the same, as the A4 author's amendment does not make changes that would alter our position or concerns. We are well on record opposed to attempts to impose unworkable one-size-fits-all mandates on Minnesota business community because of the variety and nuances of the many workplaces across the state and the strict labor laws and workplace standards that already exist at all levels of government. Minnesota businesses don't have the luxury of considering tax and labor policies and state spending and regulatory decisions separately in a vacuum. So employers, particularly our state's mid and small-sized businesses, are currently at risk of a multitude of paid leave mandates and workplace burdens in addition to proposals that increase their tax bill at the same time. This is in a state that is already considered a high tax, high cost of doing business state. House File 1200 in particular places a new payroll tax on every employer to create an overly broad new state-run insurance program that will collectively cost the Minnesota business community billions of dollars, as exemplified in the appropriation included in the author's A4 amendment. The proposal is based on modest assumptions and outdated data and is overly ambitious in its timeline for implementation. In addition to the direct cost on employers, the proposal will require hundreds of state full-time employees to start, implement, and administrate a program at a time when state agencies are struggling with their own workforce shortages. More importantly, this proposal creates a mechanism for an employee to be away from their job for up to 24 weeks in a year. That's 44% of a working year. Finally, this bill requires employers to maintain onerous records in a specific format or risk significant fines and liabilities for a set of benefits that a majority of our members are already offering their employees in some form. For these reasons and others previously shared, our collective organizations respectfully encourage a no vote on House File 1200 and appreciate the opportunity to share our opposition again with the committee. Thank you.
And thank you so much for your testimony. Hopefully, if there are any questions, you can wait a while. And the next person is Shannon Burns. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello, Chair Noor and members. My name is Shannon Burns, and I'm an entrepreneur in Alexandria and own the Nord, an exclusive small business consultancy in the West Central region of Minnesota and across the state. I'm a member of the Main Street Alliance, a network of small business owners working toward an equitable and resilient small business economy by creating resilient communities. The pandemic has been a roller coaster for myself and the small business owners I work with. Every single small business that I work with has had to be without members of their staff for weeks at a time, sometimes more than once in the last couple of years, and it's only put them further behind. Luckily, the federal government provided businesses with a limited amount of paid medical time off in 2021 through the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, allowing businesses to pay their staff while they had to be off because they had to quarantine or care for a loved one. Being able to provide this type of benefit was a first for most small businesses in Alexandria and other areas of greater Minnesota, one that should not end with the pandemic. As an individual mom and pop business owner, I lack the support system that many people in the corporate world have. When myself or my family has been sick or in need of quarantine, I need to halt my business activities while I recover or care for my loved ones. I undoubtedly have lost significant income during that time, and I know I'm not the only one. Minnesota has a historic opportunity to support small business owners. With the right support, small business owners can better navigate the path to thriving within their communities and growing their businesses now and in the future. House File 1200 is important to every Minnesota, especially small businesses in greater Minnesota, which provide the majority of jobs outside of the Twin Cities metro. Paid family medical leave will allow businesses to compete with large corporations who are able to provide this benefit, thus retaining the workforce in greater Minnesota. Passing paid family medical leave will mean other entrepreneurs and myself do not have to choose between our health, our loved ones, or our income. I urge members of the committee to pass House File 1200.
Thank you so much, Ms. Burns, for your testimony. I appreciate the statement that you gave about the small businesses, and we're here to support you, knowing that there's a lot that is needed. The next person is Eliana Mejia. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on such an important issue. My name is Ileana Mejia, and I am the public policy advocate for the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. We are a state association with over 2,300 member nonprofits across the state. We know that nonprofits play an important role in Minnesota's communities by providing essential services, employing local residents, and improving the quality of life. We have almost 392,000 employees and over 9,000 employers. The nonprofit sector represents 14% of Minnesota's workforce. So Minnesota Council of Nonprofits supports paid family and medical leave legislation. We do believe that this is one step towards supporting nonprofit strengths and sustainability as viable and competitive employers. It would be providing living wages, by providing living wages and offering strong benefits and supporting staff, that will be crucial to the sector to attract to attract and retain professionals who work tirelessly to meet the rising demands of our communities. We believe our paid family medical leave will advance economic security and reduce both income and racial disparities. The majority of the nonprofit workers are between the ages of 22 to 44 years old, which is when most folks start thinking about and having a family. About 75% of the sector do identify as women as well. Lower income Minnesotans and workers who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color are low-income Minnesotans and workers who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color are more likely to lack access to these benefits and have fewer resources to get through times of illness and the need for family caregiving. So having to choose between keeping a steady paycheck and supporting the needs of one family disproportionately impacts women, Black, Indigenous, and people of color, as evidenced by the COVID-19 pandemic. Paid family and medical leave helps to ensure small nonprofits are able to minimize hardship of losing a staff person for medical or parental leave by not having to choose between paying the staff on leave, thereby increasing the chances of returning to the workforce and hiring someone to temporarily cover the work. We released our fifth COVID impact report, and that was in December 2021. It showed that 47% of Minnesota nonprofits can only operate for about 12 months or less before exhibiting financial distress. And one of the top concerns for nonprofits in 2022 is meeting the increased demand for services while funding sources remain unpredictable. So small organizations in particular will benefit from systems that allow smaller payments and installments for future needs rather than having to pay a larger lump sum in the future. So this legislation would provide many benefits to employers, employees, and Minnesota overall, while also reducing racial disparities. On behalf of MCN and our members, we ask all members of this committee to please vote in favor of House File 1200. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Mejia. And quite frankly, the nonprofits are usually forgotten, and we want to make sure that they're included in the conversation because it broadens the pool of workers to be included in this program. The next person is Tony Mangeskow. Please welcome to the committee and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee. My name is Tony K. Mangeskow, and I live in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm here today on behalf of Isaiah and AARP to tell you about my family and my experience as a family caregiver. Minnesota's population is aging, and family caregivers are the backbone of our long-term care system. As a family caregiver through the years, I have provided care for my adult son who has a chronic health condition, my dad who had end-stage heart and lung disease, my mom who was diagnosed with cancer, my developmentally disabled brother, and my adult daughter who has struggled with mental illness and chemical dependency. This includes driving them to appointments, to more complex tasks like wound care. I have done all of this while working full-time. It's challenging and a full-time job, but my family has needed me. Working in cancer research, I hear from other caregivers with similar experiences. Through the years, my role as a family caregiver has been a financial strain. During a nine-month period in 2017, I went without one-third of my yearly income due to unpaid time away from work. I have declared bankruptcy in the past. I wasn't able to afford unpaid time away from work, keep a roof over our heads, buy groceries, pay our utilities, and other necessary expenses along the way. In the past, with my family members' illnesses, they've been in the emergency room, hospitalized multiple times, spent time in skilled nursing facilities, treatment facilities, and in hospice care. I was their healthcare decision maker and needed to be by their side. When treatments failed, it required difficult conversations that needed to be done at their bedside or in the doctor's office. I needed to see and feel within my heart that my family members felt comfortable with these very tough decisions that had to be made. Unfortunately, for my mom in hospice, because my family and I were so burnt out trying to juggle work and time away to be with her, she died alone without family at her bedside. I'm not sure what the future may bring for my other family members. Having guaranteed paid time away from work to care for them would ease so much stress related to my finances. Unfortunately, my family's story is not uncommon, but I would do anything for my loved ones. The value of a family's emotional support and presence during a loved one's illness cannot be measured, and it should not be degraded or punished by the fear of financial difficulty. As caregiving becomes the new normal, most of us will likely be caregivers during our lifetimes. No one should ever have to live with making a choice between not paying their bills and sacrificing their loved one's well-being. I am so excited by the House to put $1.7 billion of the budget surplus dollars to get this program up and running for 2 years so that Minnesota families can benefit from this policy sooner. This is totally possible and overdue. It's time for Minnesota lawmakers to pass a paid family and medical leave program. An army of family caregivers are counting on you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Mangaskow, for sharing your story and that powerful statement. That's why we needed to get this bill going. Thank you so much. The next person is Ann Deschler. Ann, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Chair Noor and members of the committee, my name is Ann Deschler. I live in Prior Lake, and I'm a registered nurse, a caregiver, and an advocate for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. I would like to share my story and explain my support for House File 1200. In 2017, my mom was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia. At the time, my two daughters, my husband and I were living in Edina, and I was working full-time for a major healthcare provider in the Twin Cities. My mom and dad lived in Owatonna. My dad, 89 years old at the time, needed help getting my mom to and from all of her appointments, so I stepped in as a backup extra caregiver. The drive from Edina to Owatonna is about an hour, not something I could fit in between my meetings during the workday. My mom, due to her diagnosis, received her care in Rochester, which added another 45 minutes drive time in addition to the time spent in the procedures, the appointments, and receiving treatment. Being a caregiver for cancer patients is not only a labor of love, but it's also time consuming. Thankfully, I did have paid family and medical leave through my employer. This allowed me to be able to support and care for my mom without worrying about my family's bottom line or if I could be penalized for my absence. I would not have been able to support my mom and my elderly dad the way I did, if not for this policy. All Minnesotans should have access to paid family medical leave. Creating a state-administered plan leave insurance program is the right thing to do for our state. It's good for employers, for employees, and for all Minnesotans. People shouldn't have to decide between missing a paycheck and caring for a new child, themselves, or a loved one fighting cancer. Caring for others is a Minnesotan value. I ask that you vote yes for House File 1200. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing your story and your testimony. If you can wait for a few minutes, just in case there's any question. The next person is Janet Linnaeus. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to tell my story. My name is Janet Linnaeus, and I'm from Minneapolis, and I am an AARP member. I came here today to tell you about my 89-year-old mom and my experience as a family caregiver. Every day, thousands of Minnesotans help their parents, spouses, and other loved ones remain at home where they want to be. I am one of those Minnesotans. In 2006, my mom was hospitalized with pneumonia and was diagnosed with a heart condition. This was the start of my caregiving journey. Over the years, she developed dementia and requires additional care. I have gradually started taking on more of the household duties. I manage all of mom's finances, clean the house, grocery shop, wash her hair, pick up prescriptions, and help her connect with friends. She can still manage some daily activities, but I need to check on her a few times a day. I'm doing all of this while running my own business. I've been self-employed for 25 years and enjoy some flexibility in my working hours. But as mom's caregiving needs increase, I find that I can no longer take on the amount of work needed to make ends meet for my family. 5 years ago, I took on a delivery job one day a week to supplement my self-employment income, which can be uneven. Mom was alone while I was out making deliveries. My husband and kids could step in while I was out, but they are unable to provide the same level of care that I, as her primary caregiver, can provide. When the pandemic hit, my husband's business collapsed, and I increased deliveries to 5 days per week. But as mom's caregiving needs increased, I had to let the delivery job go. I find it's challenging to make ends meet. My family recently started receiving food assistance through SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, to help us get by until we can get back on our feet. I want to work and commit to my business, but it's difficult to juggle caregiving duties with my work. A paid family leave program would help me fill in the gaps, allowing me to take the time I need to care for my mom without losing the income my family needs and keep me in the workforce. Being a family caregiver isn't always easy, especially when caring for someone with dementia. I try to remember how my mom was when she was younger, generous and always helping others. She still has a sense of humor, and I enjoy a laugh with her every day. With my help, we have been able to keep my mom out of a nursing home for now. But no one should ever have to choose between attending to their loved one's well-being or paying their bills. I urge lawmakers to pass this bill and establish a paid family leave program. Thank you again for the opportunity to share my testimony.
Thank you so much, Ms. Lunis, for your testimony. Appreciate that. And the last but not the least, who is scheduled to testify is Ms. Perez. Welcome, Gloria Perez. Introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Noor, Lead Hamilton, and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Gloria Perez, and I am the President and CEO of the Women's Foundation of Minnesota. As a statewide community foundation since 1983, the Women's Foundation is more than just a funder. We work with and for communities to address the greatest challenges facing women and girls in our state through grant making, research, and public policy. Like you, we want Minnesota to be a state we can all be proud of. To retain the workforce we need, paid family and medical leave should be a basic right and not a privilege. While you or I may have the luxury of taking this policy for granted, that right is not available for too many in our state. As we see through the Status of Women and Girls research the foundation produces every 2 years, and we hear from women that we listen to around the state, family medical leave is key to the long-term success of women, parents, and all human beings, and should not be optional. However, in the second year of the pandemic, with historic numbers of women pushed out of the workforce, we can see how far we have to go to value the work of women, particularly those pushed to the margins, with an infrastructure that values their work in caregiving and does not leave their talent on the sidelines. The data shows women are concentrated in low-wage occupations like service industries, where benefits are scarce and pay is low, and women of color dominate these fields. And yet, a significant portion of Minnesota's mothers are the primary breadwinner in the family. 58% of Black mothers, 46% of Native American mothers are heads of household, and yet their work is not
poorly compensated, and not only that, they lack basic benefits. So who stands to lose in this equation? Not just women, but families. To achieve economic security and a fair economic playing field, we must value the work and roles that women provide by compensating, at minimum, her right to take leave. The essential building blocks of economic security and wealth building consistently shortchange our Black, Indigenous, Latina, immigrant women, and other women of color, and we cannot stand by and pretend we can't do anything about it. Investing in women benefits children, families, and communities. To do something about the barriers that keep working women from the dignity we all deserve, we must intervene and ensure paid family leave, paid family and medical leave is a basic right for all people by passing House File 1200. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Ms. Perez, for your testimony. And with that, members, I see there's some few things that we wanted to care for. I would like to invite Representative Becker to ask a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the chief author, Representative Richardson, thank you again for bringing the bill forward to some degree, I have to be honest. I remember meeting with you after our hearing last year, and I really appreciated meeting with you and a few others to try to find a serious way to kind of connect with how can we do some good with this. We heard the stories today about the need, is important in certainly a lot of areas. These stories are very hard to hear, and I, as an employer myself, I know this. My question, I guess, to Representative Richardson is, after we met, my urging at that point was to try to get something that was more reasonable. 12 or 24 weeks, it's a huge all-in. Did you spend any time over the last interim or last season to talk to business concerns? NFIB has over 10,000 members, or the Minnesota Chamber, to find some way to move this thing along. And also, I wanted to see if there's been any movement on the Senate side so that we can talk about where that's at from your standpoint, please.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker, for your comments as well. I appreciated the opportunity to sit down with you and a number of your colleagues last year to talk about paid family leave. And there have been a lot of conversations that have been happening for years now in terms of talking with businesses of all levels, large businesses and employers like Target, for example, and small mom and pop shops as well. And what I will say in terms of what's different here within this bill, we've got an opportunity to think about how we are using our surplus to support businesses and how to support families as well. And I think there is a definite opportunity to continue these conversations. My goal is to continue to have conversations with you, to continue to have conversations with your colleagues as well. We know that when bills are introduced, very rarely do they end up passing exactly how they were introduced as well, and through amendments, through floor debates, and through conference committees, we're oftentimes seeing change. And I just want to say that I remain open to continuing to have these conversations with you and your colleagues and others as well. To ensure that we are able to pull together something that is going to ensure that we are supporting all Minnesota working families. We're just continuing to have the unevenness here. And I think you've heard the stories and from businesses. We're hearing from businesses in rural areas that they're losing people who can't continue to live in the area that they love because they want to start a family. And they don't have the ability to start a family in that area with the limited work opportunities around you know, family leave. We're hearing that, you know, people are having to delay having children because they can't afford to have a child under the current circumstances. And so I just say that I remain open to continuing to have conversations around this. Thank you, Chair Noor.
Representative Bates. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. Again, I was in earnest about trying to help you write a better bill. And my colleagues were as well. And when we want to keep people in rural Minnesota, like you had mentioned, and keep the folks being able to work and take care of their families, we won't be there to take care of our families if we're not in business, because too many state mandates get too heavy and too much burden. We just can't do it any longer, especially for the smaller businesses. So I guess I'm just disappointed. I know you've got other folks that want to speak to, but I'm disappointed to all the folks that were here today to testify that your bill did nothing new to get businesses sort of engaged in a better look at what could something else look like. So I'm disappointed. I don't mind meeting more. I just want to make sure that you're doing something that will take the ears and the concerns of businesses and school boards that we heard today and others. We have to find a better middle ground. So thank you so much for that. And I look forward to hopefully getting some seriousness in this work here. Thank you.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think one of the most significant things that we are looking at doing differently this time is bringing $1.7 billion to the table from the general fund to ensure that we are recognizing that we know businesses are hurting. We know that families are hurting as well. And, you know, the costs associated with not moving forward with a paid family and medical leave bill are also great to the state as well. And as we are in the midst of one of the most significant, probably war on talents in most recent history, to be able to work to build a system that creates a more even safety net for all families in Minnesota is going to help all businesses. We know right now, small businesses don't have the ability to compete with the larger corporations. And when we look at the programs the organizations that do have access to paid family leave today, right now, in a pretty significant way as what's in this bill, we know who's being left out. It's the lowest paid Minnesotans. It's Black Minnesotans. It's Indigenous Minnesotans, Latinx Minnesotans, and women as well. And so we know the cost and the continued costs of not moving this bill forward, and I remain committed to working with all stakeholders to get to something that's going to build a more even safety net for not just a few Minnesotans, but for all.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Richardson, would you be open to just renaming this the Minnesota GoFundMe Fund? Because that's what this is. And I, you know, everybody knows I had my accident this summer, and people shouldn't have to rely on GoFundMe to make sure that their kids are cared for when they need it. And so I know it's kind of a sarcastic question, but I mean, that's literally what we are doing, is that we are, setting up a safety net for people that need it. And everybody's going to need it at some point. And I've been lucky enough that when, you know, I had my baby, I was able to bring her with and care for her and had that critical time to bond. But when I cut my fingers off, my husband had to go back to work right away. And, you know, we didn't have anybody there that would be able to care for my kiddo. And so we had to put her back in daycare, and it was an unexpected cost. And everybody knows how much daycare is. This is the right thing to do. And we need to stand up and do the right thing.
Thank you so much, Representative Cagle, for centering us on what is important to all of us. And Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Thank you, Representative, or Chair Richardson. I know we've discussed this bill in the past, and I know that some have equated this to the unemployment insurance program, setting up a new system, paying in, employers pay in. My first question is, when is the how long till implementation of this, and when would it be required to start?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Chair Noor. And so what we would be looking at in terms of the collection of premiums from businesses, we'd be looking at starting to collect those premiums on January 1st of 2024. The amendment that we are talking through today would have benefits slated to begin in 2023. In terms of, I mean, the bill today is being laid over within the committee because the goal is to continue to have some additional conversations around what that start date for the payment of actual payment of benefits would be to Minnesotans, understanding the timeline that it would take to build out the system, to your point, that is modeled after what it looks like in our UI, in our UI program, rather.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I guess on that note, it sounds like we're putting the horse before the cart before the horse a little bit, and probably using the surplus money to do it if we're going to start paying out before we start collecting, which I guess in my view, I mean, as a small business owner, anything I can do to help my employees and give them the time off, because we give them the time off anyways, and whether we help them or not, we want to make sure that family life is first and foremost. But kind of a segue into something you said about implementation. My question would be, so similar to UI, there's a provision in here that talks about the requirement of employers to give notice with every paycheck or monthly. I wasn't sure what the actual specifics of when, but to give notice to the employee of their benefits that they take in and pay out to the government to implement this program, and then what the accumulation of those benefits are. But currently we don't do that for unemployment benefits, so it seems like there's another burden placed upon especially a small business who doesn't have some big wing of an accounting department. So I would ask that you take a look at that, because once again, it's gonna add costs. And then when we talk about implementation ramp up, what about the computer programs, whether you're using QuickBooks or ADP or somebody as a small business owner? What timeframes have you spoken with any of those corporations or companies about programming into their systems to make it easier on to the small business owner to implement this system? Things like that, because once again, it's not about the system, it's about implementing the system. And then on top of that, I'm guessing these other companies are gonna charge a cost to, you know, disperse and run a whole new system. So have you had any discussions with companies like that about the ramp up and implementation programming and all of that for small companies with their payroll systems?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frankie, for your questions. And I think a couple of things that I would lift up in terms of thinking about the small business community and where support can come from. One of the provisions of the bill is to ensure that there's technical assistance that is available for small businesses. There are also small business focused grants that are available as well for small businesses to take advantage of, knowing that the administration piece for a small business is going to look very different from a larger from larger businesses as well. And in terms of thinking through the variety of different systems that an organization might be using, be it QuickBooks, be it ADP, we also have ability, and we've had the ability with check-ins with other states who have implemented paid family leave programs to have learnings from the nine other states that have implemented this program. And in terms of conversations, as I said to Representative Baker, very open to continuing to have those conversations, and appreciate you bringing the perspective of small business owners to the conversation as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Franke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Richardson. I know you're always open, and I really appreciate that, because I think we all want to do the right thing here, especially, one thing I've heard about is leveling the playing field between big business and small business. And just something to put out there, you don't need to answer, and then I'll just wrap up, Mr. Chair. Do you see a potential, and I kind of do in the back of my head, where large, big, huge corporations that already offer some type of a system to their employees, they could potentially back out, get into the state system, and then therefore offer a different offset type of benefit, and then we're kind of right back to where we were, where everybody was on the level playing field, but now the bigger, huger corporations have more to offer. So whatever we can do to keep that in mind too. First and foremost, it's about the people and allowing them to be able to care for loved ones or have children, but just the thought that we may see others take advantage of it and offset and then get into the program. I don't know if there's any consideration brought to that, but thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative or Chair Richardson.
Thank you so much, Chair Richardson. Did you want to quickly respond, or I can go to Representative Cotizzo too?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you again, Representative Franke, for raising that issue as well. One of the conversations that I've been having with some of the larger businesses in Minnesota, businesses that are currently providing benefits that are similar to this or greater than this, the way that the bill has the way that the bill has been drafted, it doesn't take away a business's opportunity to provide more to an employee. But I think in terms of thinking through the baseline of creating a benefit structure where there are so many gaps that currently are in the system, it gives the ability for people to be able to opt in to positions that are at the heart of what they want to do or that they love to do. We heard from nonprofits. We know that nonprofits are struggling right now in the midst of the COVID pandemic, and we know that they're losing employees because you can go somewhere else and you can make more money, and you can get better benefits. We're hearing about small businesses who want to be able to offer this for their employees, but just don't have the ability to do it. And so I do think that there is an opportunity for that to create the ability to stay with an employer and to reduce overall turnover. And one point to that too, just in terms of the reduction of turnover and how important that is to small businesses, having to bring in new people over and over again to try to train them, I mean, there's a cost to that. So even if you're losing someone and having to bring someone in to retrain them, there are significant costs that go into having to do that. And if we're losing people from different positions because they can go across the street and get access to the paid family medical leave that they need for their family, those are going to be costs as well with attrition of workers and the significant attrition that we tend to see with women in the workforce, particularly after giving birth, because when women are faced with, am I going to go back to work less than 2 weeks after giving birth, which 25% of women in the United States do in our country, that's oftentimes an opportunity for someone to say, I'm opting out of going back. After I had my daughter and I had to go back in 2 weeks, I opted out of going back into the workforce because I wanted to spend that first, I wanted to spend those first 12 weeks with her. And as a result of that, they lost an employee. They had to hire a new employee. And then I had to find other employment. And so just knowing that some of those basic fundamentals being there as a baseline, it's going to help not only families, but it's going to help businesses as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Representative Cotizzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is really timely where I came up in the question lineup here, because I just, Representative Richardson, everything you just said about helping employees and helping businesses, leveling that playing field, I think is so critical. I want to remind everybody, this isn't just like about some Minnesotans getting some and some Minnesotans getting none. There are employers who offer paid leave programs for certain people. For certain women, my former employer, they had different amounts of leave for different ways to create your family, and so it was difficult. My husband and I struggled with fertility for years and years, and our first few children are adopted. If you adopted a child that was an infant, you got 1 week of paid leave. If you adopted children over the age of infancy, you got nothing. So I took FMLA and I was able to be home with our kids when they came home to us. But my colleagues who gave birth, either vaginally, they received one amount of set paid leave. If they had a C-section, they got another set of paid leave. And then there was fathers who received one, or other spouses who didn't give birth got another 1 week. But because I had adopted my children and they weren't infants, I got nothing. So I filled in for those colleagues when they were home with their babies and they were getting paid for it. And I'm really glad that they were able to do that. But then when I was home on leave, I wasn't getting compensated whatsoever. And it was so important to me, and that my family and my financial situation were able to do that. So I do have a question though, Representative Richardson, either for you or potentially for Ms. Fitzpatrick, possibly, because we talked about the different versions of this bill that have kind of rolled out across the country in different states, and kind of like finding that middle ground, because, there are companies who can provide something already. There are companies who are small businesses who are really struggling. What is kind of that middle ground? What does it look like from one state to the next, and the bill that we have before us now with the amendment? What does that look like kind of as far as, from one side to the other? I'm just curious what that.
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cotizzo Watoon. Before I get to the question of what it looks like across the other states who have passed paid family and medical leave, I just want to lift up one thing that you said, because I think it's really important about the discretion and the differences that can pop up with leave programs and whether they're paid and how much time that you get. When we think through some of the disparities that we see within the state of Minnesota and in many areas, we have some horrible disparities based on gender, based on based on race, based on income as well. And just understanding that so often where the disparities breed is in that discretion. So when it's sort of wide open and someone gets to decide, you know, I think you're worthy of leave, you not so much. I think that that is one of the potential challenges that we're seeing right now in terms of who gets access and who decides who gets access. So I really appreciate you lifting that up. And then in terms of looking at other states in terms of what they're offering in terms of paid leave, on the high end, you have Massachusetts, which is 26 weeks of leave. Of 26 weeks of paid leave. There are states that are offering, 4 weeks of paid leave. And so, in terms of what those bookends look like, they are different. But I think in terms of, you know, what we have before us and the opportunity that we have before us, I think as step one, we all need to agree that paid family and medical leave is something that we need to move forward for all Minnesotans, not just some. And, you know, as I had shared with some of the previous representatives in terms of the number of weeks, those are all things that are open, definitely open for discussion. So thank you for the question. Thank you, Chair Noor.
If you wanted to respond, Ms. Fitzpatrick, briefly onto that question.
Well, I guess I'll just add briefly that, you know, the approach in House File 1200 is in many ways the moderate approach. It's the approach everyone around the entire world uses because in many ways it's the conservative approach. It's proven. It's the one that we know will work. And so I do think that to position it as somehow radical or somehow out of the norm, I think is a mischaracterization. And so in many ways, I think House File 1200 does cut the middle ground.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Thank you, Chair Richardson, for all your work on this. I know the time and energy that it takes for a proposal of this magnitude. Some of my questions have been asked by the other testifiers, but I wanted to comment as well. This is a massive proposal, and we heard, I think this bill was heard in six or more committees in the previous session. And I had some of the same concerns that Representative Baker did, that I'm not seeing changes being made to the proposal based on so much input from the business community, both large and small employer. Some of the comments today, even by the Minnesota Catholic Conference, Mr. Hamilton. So really, really looking to see how this proposal is adapting to that input. So just a comment there that I encourage you to do more of that work. That's what it's gonna take to ever get, you know, something like this through both bodies. But I am concerned about the proposal to use a surplus money, which we know is one-time money, for a long-term program. And what happens when we start paying benefits? Your bill calls for that in 2023, but the program doesn't get implemented and with the tax on employers until 2024. That seems to be somewhat risky to me that we don't have a plan then. And again, in order to put in 300 or 400 new employees, a massive IT system, a new division with Indeed. And I don't know today that there's anybody on the call from Indeed to respond to if that is a doable proposal within, you know, a year and a half timeframe. So I don't know if you have any comments on those questions about, you know, your ramp up and how Indeed's going to handle that. And what do we do if your 1.7 are, you know, isn't enough to pay out the premiums in that first year?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Representative, or thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you, Representative Haley, for your questions. And, you know, I'll reiterate the comments that I made with Representative Frankie as well. The bill is being held over at this point, and we are going to continue to do work with stakeholders as well. So we're going to be continuing to have conversations around those dates, and we'll be back in committee around those pieces as well. You know, in terms of you know, what's different, you know, being able to bring a significant investment from the general fund is really one of the most significant differences under this proposal. And you know, Ms. Deb Fitzpatrick might have some additional comments as well, but there's been a lot of work done in terms of looking here in Minnesota specifically at those with current paid leave programs and being able to track on average how many weeks individuals have been taking, and also looking to see the usage of those who have access to paid leave programs now. The University of Minnesota did some great work and some great research around that. And one of the things that we have found in Minnesota for those who currently have access to paid leave, the majority of individuals are not taking paid leave at the highest level of the cap that they have. Typically, it was about 6 weeks of unpaid leave that individuals were taking. And then in addition to what we are seeing from other states as well, we have the ability to have some learnings because we're not the first to undertake this. And Mr. Chair, if you would oblige, I would like to allow Ms. Fitzpatrick an opportunity as well.
Ms. Fitzpatrick.
Chair Noor, Chair Richardson. Yes, I just wanted to point out that the cost modeling that was referenced by some testifiers earlier is not an advocate's model. It was actually produced by the U.S. Department of Labor. And that the data that we relied on in that work was, you know, again, through that model, not something that was made up. And what we have been able to do is really track what's happening, particularly, you know, in some of the states that have come on recently, but also the longstanding states over the last few years. And what we see is going into 2022, their premiums are very much in line with the premiums that are laid out in House File 1200. So again, we're not alone in this. We're tracking carefully what's happening in other places, tracking carefully what's happening with leave-taking behavior. I will just bring that forward. And of course, that is a really important piece of this to make sure this program is going to work and be solvent in the long run.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Richardson, do you have an estimate on when you will receive a fiscal note, or has a fiscal note been requested on this bill?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have requested a fiscal note on the bill. I do not have an estimated time for receipt of that, but one has been requested.
Representative Haley.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just on record, when that fiscal note comes through, it would be helpful for the committee members to see that right away. We can make a note of that.
Absolutely.
Okay. I know we've got a few more minutes, so I'll end my questioning because I think there's others that want to get something in. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing about the large IT, there's a huge IT component to this. And I would just like to caution everybody, you know, when we rolled out MnLARS and MnSure, it didn't have a very good rollout, obviously. And so it does concern me, the time frame around all this, asking for this huge IT initiative, if you will. So it's something to consider. Representative Richardson, it was brought up before. Well, first of all, my question is, any of the other states that have programs like this, is it set up very similar as far as are the employers responsible for the payment of this plan, or how do other states implement this, if you could, please?
Chair Richardson, and if you can briefly touch on the amendment and also the closing remarks as we reach almost the end.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one thing to highlight around the IT issue that was raised up as well. Here we had to make some pretty significant changes to our UI system as a result of the COVID pandemic, and Minnesota ended up being one of the first in the nation in order to get the system up and running in order to run the pandemic unemployment insurance program. I think it's important to lift up that work as well, but definitely hear you in terms of the heavy lift that comes with any IT implementation as well. And then in terms of other states, I would just say that, you know, each state has their approach. There are programs that are similar to the way that this has been set up, where there are premiums that are paid by the employee and by the employer as well. And I know we're at time, Chair Knorr, and so I want to be respectful as to whether to allow Ms. Fitzpatrick to comment, or if we're wrapping up.
We're wrapping because we are 2:30. Lead Hamilton, we'll come back to this bill as we are still discussing some of the other components. With that, I would like to renew my motion, House File 1200, to be laid over for possible inclusion. With no any other agenda items on the schedule, we are now adjourned.